Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, buckle your seatbelts, strap in. It is another episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe. That's Manisha over there. We had a pretty wild week of the NFL for it to be this early in the season. Manish, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's funny. You see week two, and then like half the things or most of the stuff you thought about the NFL after week one goes by the wayside, and like all these like feel good stories other than Daniel Jones kind of crumbled in week two.
Dude, I just can't believe that like every time we do this, I get all up in arms, and then like everything, like the Patriots did it to me again, dude. Like last year, dude, we came on here after the Bengals win, and it was like, oh my God, like I think this is it, dude. I think we found it, dude. They needed a player-friendly coach. And then, dude, like, well, I don't know. They lose fucking 13 out of their next 16 games. Or no, 14 out of their last 17 games, including week one. And then I come on here week one, Vrabel isn't it. It's not working. And then it all comes crashing down. And then, but, you see stuff like the Bengals hold on for the first week, and then Joe Burrow get hurt. So, like, all that stuff that I talked about, dude, fucking Zach Taylor getting this team in line for the first 2 weeks for the first time ever, and it doesn't even matter anymore. They lose Joe Burrow. So I don't know if you have any more like opposite, like juxtapositions like that, how crazy you can get up and down in week one and two.
Well, it's such an interesting dynamic because these teams have, you know, the better part of a month essentially to prepare for that first game, and you don't have any tape obviously on the team that you're facing that's current. You know, going back to the previous season is one thing, but there's, you know, so much personnel turnover from team to team that it's not really that valuable. So that's why it's so unpredictable in week one. And, you know, teams that ultimately settle into being the, you know, in the upper echelon of teams in the league maybe struggle in week one. And then some teams that fall by the wayside pretty quickly surprise in week one. And that's why, you know, I know as a fan, it's impossible to do this, but you're almost better off reserving judgment until the first quarter of the season, the first month or so, essentially. And we don't do that. You know, analysts don't do that. Fans don't do that. You know, it's an instant reaction type of world.
I turned off the Pats after they went 3-0 on their first drive, dude. I was just like, you know.
Right. Look, it's natural to do that. And even after these first 2 weeks, I would caution some people and say, you know, making any kind of declarative statement, good or bad, about any team or player is kind of foolish, but I mean, that's part of the fun. That's part of the entertainment. That's why people have podcasts. That's why people listen to podcasts and watch, you know, these shows on TV every day. It's just kind of, you know, the cost of doing business. You know, you're gonna have these reactions. You're probably gonna look foolish more times than not, but that's also part of the fun.
Yeah, and so you said that like we shouldn't make any like definitive statements or anything like that, but I will say one thing. I think the Chiefs are in trouble, dude. I think that is a definitive statement I can make. Patrick Mahomes has to put it on the ground 7 times and rush for almost 70 yards to keep you in this game. That's not somewhere you want to be when you're the Chiefs. I think Xavier Worthy can come back and be maybe a little bit of an X factor for them. But I know we want to dive into the tush push and the Eagles, but I think even though that's everything that got the publicity, I think the bigger story here is that the Chiefs might be in trouble. And if they ended up dropping this game to the Giants next week as a touchdown favorite, I think alarm bells and the sky is falling in KC.
Well, I agree with you in this respect. I think they're in trouble when it comes to winning the AFC West for a number of different reasons. You know, from the Chiefs' perspective, you kind of outlined it pretty well. But even on a larger scale, they have the most stiff competition in that division than they've had in a very long time. Certainly, I think in the Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid era, because the Chargers look every bit like a Super Bowl contender. And again, I don't want to overreact to the first 2 weeks, but I'm really kind of banking on my belief in who Jim Harbaugh is as a head coach, who I always believed Justin Herbert is as a quarterback, and they look so sharp. I believe the Chargers are now the AFC West favorites in Vegas. It's the first time in a long time at any point during a season that a team other than the Chiefs have been favored to win the AFC West. And you also have the Broncos to contend with. I know they lost last week against the Colts unfortunately for them, a penalty at the end of the game on a missed field goal. But they're also very much going to be in the mix for the AFC West and certainly for a playoff spot. So I hate saying that games are must wins this early in the season, but given who their opponent is this week, the 0-2 Giants, and given where the Chiefs are at this point, winless and kind of looking rudderless on offense, I want to say that it's a must win, because if you fall back behind 0-3, it's an uphill battle, even though there are 7 playoff teams. You get that additional wild card team. I ultimately think they'll always be in the mix this season for a wild card spot, but I have serious doubts of whether they can win the division. I didn't think going into the season that they would win this division. They just look disjointed on offense. We're going to dive into the Eagles game from last week, but there were so many uncharacteristic things in that game. Forget about the switch for a moment.
Into a fucking,
exactly. Kelce dropped, but there's also another play that was so out of character, I think, for Andy Reid. And look, I followed Andy Reid dating back to his days in Philadelphia. And the fact that he went for it on fourth down, I believe at their own 36-yard line on the first drive of the second half in a tight game,
desperate.
That was so desperate and so out of character. You don't see Andy Reid teams doing that unless it's born out of desperation. But why would you be desperate on the first drive of the second half in a tight game? They didn't get it. Right, week two, the Eagles, I believe, converted a field goal on that play. A number of different reasons that they lost. They were decimated on offense, because of Xavier Worthy not being there, of course. Rashee Rice is not going to be there for another, month and a half. The offense looked horrible. They have no semblance of a running game. I thought Isaiah Pacheco was going to have a bounce back season after being injured for a big part of last season. He's been a non-factor. They're relying on this odd mix of Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco, even their rookie Breshad Smith is getting snaps. Really odd to see during the course of the game that the Chiefs' leading rusher is Patrick Mahomes, but he's running way more than he has, and he's got to be careful. Sooner or later, he's going to take a shot that he's not going to get up from, and I think that's dangerous. They just look so out of sorts on offense. And look, I think there'll be a great opportunity in primetime this week to beat the Giants on the road. If they don't, then I agree with you. They're in a boatload of trouble moving forward.
Yeah, and it's the fourth down call that you harped on there. It's just so funny that it sometimes when remember when the Patriots lost to the Chiefs on that Monday Night Massacre before they went were on to the Cincinnati game. So after that game, and like in all like the documentaries you see about the Patriots, they weren't overly like sad about that game. They weren't overly like it didn't overly shake their confidence. And Bill was like, "We competed. I saw a lot of good things in that game." And they didn't play it like a desperate second. You know what I mean? They didn't play it like a game like that. And I feel like this is almost the exact opposite. When you bring up that Andy Reid decision, usually, dude, he's not one of these aggressive analytics guy. He knows he has the best quarterback in the game. He knows he still has an elite defense, and he kind of plays it that way. So I think that's a very good thing to pick up on. But I think and the other thing I wanted to say coming up on the Giants, it's a must win for both of these teams, I feel like, especially in the Daboll era with all the new acquisitions they had this year. Did you see that the 60-plus yard field goals as time expires to win the game, there's been like 3, 4, 5 of them, and like all but one of them have been against the fucking Giants. All but one of them have been against the Giants.
I did not see that. I mean, I guess, as a Giants hater, dude, I hate
the Giants, dude. That's my favorite stat of all time.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who watched the Giants Cowboy game knew that if Brendan Arbery had a chance to tie it and win it, he was going to do it. That guy is more automatic than any kicker that I can remember. And I remember there was a time when I was growing up where anytime Morton Anderson kicked, you knew it was going in. And I don't even know what his stats are. I just remember that feeling that he was automatic. And there have been a lot of great kickers. Justin Tucker most recently has been close to automatic. But I remember growing up as a kid and thinking anytime Morton Anderson was on the field, he was going to make the kick. You feel that way about Brandon Arbery. And what I thought was funny about that Cowboy win was that Brian Schottenheimer, who won his first game as a head coach, said that he views 70 yards as the limit for Brandon Arbery. And the idea of any coach saying that is so funny, but it's really not
out. To like your own 40, and he's like, "We're good."
This guy's unbelievable. I know he's a former soccer player, but he is you know, I looked at the stats. He actually missed some field goals last year. I must have missed that, because every time I see him kick in a meaningful spot, he nails it. And what a weapon to have. And I think this week, actually, somebody asked Jerry Jones about giving a contract extension to Aubrey. I guess he's in his final year of his deal, or he's got another year left. And I guess that's on the table as well. But whatever, I don't know what the top paid kicker in the NFL makes, but whatever he makes, he should, whatever that player totally makes, agree. Aubrey should, he should clear that easily.
All right, on the other side of this, we got to get to the other side of this matchup between the Chiefs and the Eagles. The Eagles won this game. It was a close game points-wise, but I watched this whole game. I had the Eagles in a parlay, and I was sweating them to cash. So I watched this whole game, and I didn't feel for 1 second from the beginning or the end of this game that the Eagles were going to lose. I did not feel that one bit. I'm a pretty negative gambler, and I'm a pretty negative guy when it comes to watching games. And, like, my TV comes off the platform a couple times. Like, I'm gonna chuck it, and then I don't. But, yeah, I thought the Eagles were in control this whole game. Like you said last week, I think you'll probably get into it. The Jalen Hurts stuff is kind of mystifying. But, dude, that defensive line, dude, even though Jalen Carter was sucking wind for a good part of that game, that defensive line that you guys can cover, the new DC seems to pick up right where the old one left off. I don't really see any problems until you get into a situation where you're going to have somebody who can match you in the trenches.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the strength of this team is the lines. The offensive line, you know, one of the top handful of offensive lines in the NFL, if not the best offensive line in the NFL. The defensive line with Jalen Carter, really tough to beat. What I thought was fascinating about that game, you said that, you know, you never really had a doubt that the Eagles would win. I mean, I had doubts. You're watching that game, you see you're really two sloppy defenses or two exceptional, I mean, two sloppy offenses or two exceptional defenses, you know, depending on your perspective. You know, at the end of the day, the Eagles barely topped 200 yards of total offense. You know, 10 out of 10 times, you know, you would think that, you know, if you're going to amass so few yards on offense, you're not going to win. And the idea that the quarterback passed for 101 yards on 22 attempts, and you watched the game, Joe, so you know, I mean, virtually every pass was somewhere in the 5 yards and in.
I mean,
there were a couple.
That passing chart is jarring.
Yeah, and it's kind of been that way, honestly, for these first two games. You know, we can get into Jalen Hurts in a moment, but the Eagles were ripe to be beaten in that game. It just so happens that the Chiefs made some, you know, questionable decisions that, like we mentioned, on going for fourth down on, you know, inside your 40. Harrison Butker, typically reliable kicker, talking about how great these kickers are this year, typically reliable, missed a very makeable field goal. And, you know, a future first ballot Hall of Famer in Travis Kelce drops a touchdown in his arms at the goal line. Well, that would have put the Chiefs up 17-13 with a little bit of time left to play, but we never saw that. And I don't believe the Chiefs have actually ever led at any point during the season in the first 2 weeks, which is remarkable to even think about. That was a game-changing play. You know, those were the staple reasons why the Chiefs lost and the Eagles won. I'm just not impressed, and maybe this is just the native Philadelphia in me. You know, I'm born and raised in Philly. You know, the Eagles had an incredible season last year, capped by a Lombardi Trophy. But throughout the season, I'm sure I wasn't the only Philadelphian who was complaining every week, it seemed like, about how Eagles didn't have a passing game. I think they were bottom two or three in the NFL in passing, yet still somehow won the Super Bowl. Again, you know, thanks to Saquon Barkley. But I think there's a lot of question marks with this team. You can't take away the fact that they're 2-0. Much better to be 2-0 than 1-1 and 0-2. So you're not going to complain about that. But if you're talking about whether this team, the 2025 Eagles, are the real deal, I need to see more. You know, even last year, when you flip it over to the other side, the Chiefs won so many games, I don't know, 14, 15 games last year, I never really thought they were good. Yet somehow they made it to the Super Bowl. They got blown out by a superior team.
Score, yeah.
Right. It was just amazing how, like just unimpressive they looked while still racking up wins. And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with Philadelphia this year. What I am saying is that through two games, even though they've won two games, I don't think they're particularly impressive on offense. I thought their defense played much better in week two than they did in the first half of week one. Now, after that lightning delay against the Cowboys in week one, the defense shut out Dallas. Excellent job. But, you know, weird things happen when you have those types of extended delays. But I think that Vic Fangio is going to have this defense where it needs to be. much like he did last year in his first year as the DC. I'm not concerned about that. I'm much more concerned about what is this offense? Who is this quarterback? And how is he going to work with the offensive coordinator? Because I hear a lot of excuse making when it comes to Jalen Hurts. You know, there have been three different coordinators the last few years, Kellen Moore, Brian Johnson, and now Kevin Petullo. And I hear a lot of Eagles fans and a lot of people in the Philadelphia Eagles community saying, well, the play calling is really suspect through these first two games. And I always counter by saying, look, I'm not saying Kevin Petullo is doing an exceptional job, but when you are complaining about the same things over three different coordinators, exactly, while the quarterback remains the same, and that's the constant. Right. What is the common denominator? Perhaps there's a reason why these offensive coordinators are calling the plays that they're calling. Maybe
they feel handcuffed, dude.
You said it. I didn't. Offensive coordinators call plays that their quarterback or good offensive coordinators, even mediocre. Actually, you know what? Any offensive coordinator. Let me take that back. They call plays that their quarterback is comfortable with. There's a reason why they're not doing things that some people think they should be doing in terms of consistently stretching the field. And again, we're two games into a 17-week season, or 17-game season, so I don't want to panic, but I do have to push back a little when people are complaining about the offensive play caller instead of the quarterback, who just threw for 101 yards and he threw for 152 yards the week prior and still has not thrown a touchdown pass through 2 weeks.
Well, speaking of pushing, we have to get to it. It's the elephant in the room. I feel like there's elephants stacked up behind elephants behind me. Dude, everybody's seen the clip. Yeah. Fucking there's five guys on the list, seven guys on the line. Well, it's five guys on the line of scrimmage. Three of them are lined up on the other side of the football. And then the two guards and the center are on the defensive side of the football before the ball is snapped. And it's getting to a point where you have to be like, dude, there's got to be some kind of favoritism, or like, dude, I can't believe this rule didn't pass in the offseason. And I think when that rule didn't pass in the offseason, I think the Eagles and their staff was like, almost embracing by it. Like, all right, they're not going to outlaw it. Let's stretch the rules and stretch the fabric of the football even more.
Yeah, you know, first, let me get this out of the way. I would be stunned if the rule isn't banned, or the play isn't banned in the offseason, this upcoming offseason. Yeah. You know, as you said, they came close to banning it. They were a few votes shy. That'll change. I think it's pretty evident. I thought it was surprising, I guess, in some respects, that Dean Blandino, who's the rules judge for Fox, he's not paid for his opinions outside of what the specific rule is or penalty is. But he really kind of injected himself into this discussion by saying that I think the terminology was he's done with the tush push, which is fine. You know, I'm not a proponent of the tush push. I'm a lifelong Eagles fan. I think it's a dumb play. I think the Eagles can turn around and hand it to Saquon Barkley and pick up a first down on third and one or fourth and inches. I don't think they need to do, you know, what they've been doing for the last several years. I just think kind of for a number of different reasons. You know, and also if you're in the Jalen Hurts camp, you get inflated statistics. I mean, if I see one more graphic about how Jalen Hurts is closing in on the all-time rushing touchdowns mark, it makes me laugh. The guy's got like 20 or 40%, I guess, 20 total and touchdowns, or maybe something like 40% of his career touchdowns or tush push touchdowns. I mean, obviously those are the numbers that don't really mean anything unless you're trying to
be me or you in there,
prop up the quarterback. Right. I mean, well, I wouldn't go that far, but he's a very strong player.
You know, you got to wrap it up, dude.
It's a cheap stat. It's an irrelevant Fugazi stat. I just think it's not indicative of who Jalen Hurts is as a player. I just think it's kind of silly. And again, I don't think it makes the Eagles the Eagles. The Eagles are an incredible team. You know, in many ways, you know, as I've said recently to some people, I think they're quarterback proof. I think Howie Roseman has just done such an incredible job assembling talent at all areas, both lines, skill position players, in secondary with Quinion Mitchell now, Cooper DeJean as well. He has such an array of high quality players on this team that it's a shame in some respects that this era of Eagles football is going to be connected with the Tush Push, because I think they're a great team. I don't think they need that.
It is a damn shame, dude. It is.
It's a shame. It's also ridiculous. Now, see, I've said all this. Like, I'm anti-Tush Push, all that stuff. But I do think it's ridiculous. Some of the stuff we've heard this week, it's from some prominent people in media as well, about how the Chiefs lost this game back in the offseason when the Tush Push was not banned. They did not lose this game, dude. Because of that.
Fucking Patrick Mahomes. That's outrageous. 57 yards, dude. Like, right. What the fuck? Like,
well, and Travis Kelce dropped a touchdown, and they had a failed fourth down.
To a D-back? Yeah, dude. It's not even – I don't know. Something popped into my head. This is just we're getting off topic here, but I don't care. We're having a good time. Jalen Hurts and a couple firsts for Joe Burrow this offseason?
Jalen Hurts. The Eagles are sending Jalen Hurts and 2 first-round picks for Joe Burrow?
Yeah.
Okay, like in a hypothetical world, I mean, that's not going to happen.
I think Joe Burrow's going to ask for out. I think Howie Roseman's a smart guy, a forward-thinking guy. I think you have a 30-year-old running back that is the impetus of your whole success. So I don't know, dude. I don't know. I could see the Eagles. We talked about this the other day. There's some contract implications that kind of tie Hurts to the Eagles, I think, at least through next season. So I don't think anything is on the horizon now. But, I mean, dude. Fucking AJ Brown and Devontae Smith are both under 30. Like, your entire defense is fucking 27 years old. So I just see, like, to extend the longevity of this team, I don't think you're going to be able to run the ball for 200 yards every game in the playoffs forever. So I don't know. I think a quarterback on the horizon isn't the most crazy thing.
Yeah, I don't either.
If Joe Burrow, my favorite player in the NFL, went to the fucking Eagles, that would be the worst day of my entire life. That'd be like Jason Tatum going to the Lakers, dude. I would jump off a bridge.
I would say this about that scenario, which, you know, I think we're both in agreement it will never happen. A lot of it obviously would depend on how the Eagles do this season. You know, they went into the Super Bowl. They're not trading their quarterback. I think if you've got some truth serum in Howie Roseman, he would kill to get Joe Burrow. If you just rewind a couple years.
A lot worse than that to get Joe Burrow.
The Eagles – and Howie Roseman specifically tried to sign Russell Wilson or try to get Russell Wilson. He wasn't interested, ultimately signed with the Steelers. The Eagles tried to trade for Deshaun Watson, and that didn't happen with the Browns giving him that monster fully guaranteed contract. And I know, you know, a lot has happened since then.
Or are you breaking news, or did we know that Deshaun Watson?
That's out there. I mean, I don't know who specifically reported it or whatever. I'm just telling you that's the truth. The truth is the Eagles tried to
John Watson play for Deshaun Watson. Field day in Philadelphia. Jesus Christ. Thank God that didn't happen.
And again, look, that was a year ago for Russ, 2 years ago for Deshaun Watson. So a lot has happened since then. But, I mean, Howie Roseman is always looking to upgrade the roster. As you said, because of contractual reasons and a number of other reasons, they're not making that kind of trade. The 2 first-round picks, if you could get Joe Burrow, I would actually say this. This is not realistic either, but at least the quarterback is healthy. If you're Howie Roseman, would you trade a first round pick in Jalen Hurts for Justin Herbert? I think the answer to that question is 1,000,000% he would. Now, if you talk to some Eagles fans, some of them who are good friends of mine, they would say that would never happen. I think they're delusional. I think that they would do that in a heartbeat. And they would have done that. It has nothing to do with the last 2 games. Justin Herbert, you know, to me, looks like the leading MVP candidate after 2 games, small sample size. But forget about that. If I had this conversation 5 months ago in the offseason, would the Eagles trade the Super Bowl MVP, Jalen Hurts, and a first-round pick for Justin Herbert? Howie Roseman would do that trade in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody else fool you. Obviously, Howie Roseman's not going to come out and ever say that. But I think you're naive if you think – that Howie Roseman wouldn't trade in Jalen Hurts and a late first round pick to get his hands on Justin Herbert. Because Justin Herbert.
The fucking Eagles are going to be picking at 30, 29 the next year. Now, so Justin, it's like you're trading Hurts in 29 for fucking Justin Herbert. Like, come on.
I mean, Justin Herbert throwing to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith and having Saquon for probably another year or so. That team would be hard pressed to lose games with that defense too. Oh, by the way, so you have a Vic Fangio defense, tops in the NFL last year, looks really good for the most part through this early part of the season. and you have Justin Herbert throwing not to an old Keenan Allen or Quentin Johnston or a second-round pick in Ladd McConkey, but throwing to two bona fide star players, one a top three wide receiver in the NFL in A.J. Brown, and another who would be the number one wide receiver on probably 75 to 80% of the NFL teams in Devontae Smith. That team would be scoring 35 points a game every single week.
That would be like the 2007 Patriots, dude. They have a good possession receiver. They got a deep ball guy, and they got a good game. Like,
that would be unbelievable.
We got a lot to get to here, dude. I will talk about Jalen Hurts, dude. I was a Jalen Hurts detractor when he was at fucking Alabama, dude. Like I'll talk Jalen Hurts all day. You know, I'm a generational hater. That's what it comes to. A guy that I hate after football, but I loved when he was a Patriot. Tom Brady, dude. Tom Brady was caught in the Monday Night Football booth with a fucking headset on. I don't know, dude. This is untreaded waters. If I was an opposing player or coach and he interviewed me for a Monday or for a fucking football game, I would be like, yo, dude, like, I love you. You're the best of all time. But like, I really don't feel comfortable talking to you.
Yeah.
So, and I think where this comes back to is, dude, his entire career, we were all, remember, everybody in the Patriots, everybody who loved Tom Brady, it's his attention to detail. It's his maniacal nature. It's this obsession with being perfect. Do you think that guy that we championed that way for his entire 20-year career that gave him success, the most success ever in North American sports history? Sorry, Michael Jordan. Brady's got seven. You think that guy who's maniacal to the point where he wore scuba gear for the last 3 years of his career when it was cold, the guy that created an entire health brand to play until he was 45 effing years old. You think that guy isn't taking shit from those meetings and filing it away? And oh, by the way, we're going to put it in your face now because I'm going to be on a headset in the booth. He's in the booth. And it's like, yeah, I know this Ursay, the Ursay's daughter's on the field. I think that's a really cool story, to be honest with you. I think that's cool because she's like, yo, I'm going to be firing and hiring all these guys. I got to know who's fucking up and when. So I think that's really cool. I think Tom Brady, it's not a 30,000-foot view. That Ursay lady, she's on the field, and that's a 35-foot view that she's trying to see. Who calls the play? How do they get it in? Who's the one messing up? Tom Brady is like, oh, wait, no, this guy's in the box. He's the only time he's in the box, he comes off the edge. Or, oh, they're in this formation, and they're definitely dropping into cover three. Like, call this play. So it's so much more intricate when you have a player with that – when you have a former player with that mind in the booth and that information. I saw it getting compared to the Ursay lady all week, and I was like, I think that's – what she's doing is great, and I think that more owners should be that way. Even though if Jonathan did that, I would rip him to high heavens. But, like – I think that like that is great what she's doing, but I think the Tom Brady thing is on a completely different fucking level.
Yeah, I don't understand the comparison. One is an owner who wants to make sure that she has, you know, a great perspective of what's happening within her own organization. The other is an owner who is talking to state coaches. Well, I mean, he's still an owner and he still has say. I agree with you about the production meetings. The NFL really didn't put any restrictions on him of any consequence this year. Now they're falling back on this idea that Brady is not allowed to practice during the end of the week, which is typically what happens. The guys who call the games, they come to practice Thursday or Friday or maybe Saturday, talk to players and coaches. Brady's not allowed on the field to watch practice. He, however, is allowed. Yeah, he's allowed to meet virtually or on the phone. I don't know how they would do it, but he's allowed to have conversations in the run up to the game with coaches and players. But I'm with you. If you're a coach specifically, you know, players don't really divulge much regardless. But if you're a coach, why would you share anything with Tom Brady if you know that he is going to run to Chip Kelly and run to Pete Carroll and share that information? And I know that what Pete Carroll said this week, he said that the conversations that he and Chip have with Tom are quote unquote random and not structured. And they don't really talk about much else other than what's happening with their team. I mean, if you believe that, you're pretty naive. I mean, I like to think that the average fan isn't that naive. Tom Brady, as you eloquently just said, is maniacal in his preparation and everything about his football life and probably is his broadcasting life. He is so detail oriented that he will take any piece of information that you give him and try to use it to his advantage, or in this particular case, the Raiders' advantage. What I found to be interesting this week is that he's calling the Cowboys-Bears game, and Ben Johnson was asked about that because in 2 weeks, the Bears are playing against the Raiders. So he was asked about if he felt uncomfortable talking to Brady, and you know, Ben Johnson doesn't really divulge much. He admitted that he has a good relationship with Brady. If you guys, if you remember, Ben Johnson was a candidate for the Raiders job. I think if Brady had his druthers, he would have hired Ben Johnson, but Johnson decided to go to Chicago for whatever reason. So I understand Ben Johnson not wanting to burn any bridges, you know, kind of fracture that relationship by saying anything untoward about Tom Brady.
But just like you said, if you're pretty naive if you think that Ben Johnson is telling the 100% truth there. Like, even if he's not uncomfortable talking to Brady in the sense that having a conversation with him, he's definitely tepid in what he divulges in that conversation.
Yeah, he's guarded, as I think anybody should be. I want to give credit to the person who said this, but I just can't remember at this moment. But somebody said, well, how would you feel if Jerry Jones was talking to coaches every week that aren't Cowboys coaches? And players who aren't Cowboys players, how would you feel? And then he would run back to his own coaching staff and to his son, Steven, and kind of relay everything that he's heard. It's such an obvious conflict of interest. I really don't understand why the NFL, and specifically when I say the NFL, the other owners aren't pushing back on this, because this is really an owner's thing. It's not a Roger Goodell. You want to point the finger at Roger Goodell, you're really missing the point.
They're the ones that negotiate the media deal too. So it's like, it's almost, is it a conflict of interest? Like you're a part of the body that negotiates the deal for the network that you work for. So like on so many different levels, I just don't get, and I said it in the group message and I'm pretty brash. I'm pretty direct. I'm pretty demonstrative, but like it feels like I'm like, it just feels like a massive conflict of interest. And like Tom Brady just needs to pick something and go with it. Like
totally
you can't be the fucking OC, the owner, call the game on the next Sunday. And it's like, you got to pick something and go with it. And that's what was like so annoying during the end of his career when he started being like this star bleeping, like famous guy. And he had TB12. He had this, he had that. Now he has Hurts and he has this, he has his hands in fucking, now he's sports washed. Now he's fucking sports washing with the fucking Saudis. So it's like, not only are you now the fucking Phil Mickelson or Greg Norman of the NFL, you're also have your hands in so many different things that everybody is questioning your motives, dude. Did you get this broadcasting job? Did you know that you had a chance of getting a stake in a team and you get this broadcasting job because you think, dude, we know you're maniacal. So like, why can't it go even deeper that you wanted a job in broadcasting so you can get even more of a leg up and have even more of an instant change when you go to a fucking, when you go to a team? But dude, the Raiders, this all being said, didn't fucking help this week. That team fucking sucks.
No, it didn't. I got a bad beat story. So,
tell me real quick.
So I'm in a guillotine fantasy football league. You know, nobody wants to hear about your team on a fantasy football league, but anybody who understands the concept of the guillotine league is if you have the lowest score of the 18 teams in this league, you lose. And then when you lose, your players become free agents. They can be picked up by the other teams in the league. So I had a good friend of mine who needed 7 points from Geno Smith, which is nothing. If you play fantasy football, you know getting 7 points from your quarterback. Yeah, in any format, it's a virtual lock. And then Geno, you know, decided to have the 3-interception, no touchdown game. I think he finished in this format with 2 points, and my buddy got bounced. But yeah, you're right. The Raiders, whew, man, for as good as they looked against the Patriots week one, and for as good as Geno looked throwing the ball in week one, they look like a complete train wreck against the Chargers on Monday.
And that's a great segue into the Patriots, man. I guess I'll start off. You know how passionate of a fan I am. I was encouraged by this week, but I have tepid encouragement. What the Raiders did to the Patriots in week one versus what they did to an actual professional football, what they did versus an actual professional football operation in week two was tough, man. And I think that there's so many good things going from the Pats that I think I just want to get into that before I get negative. Like, I think we talked about last week, the running game. I think that was a huge difference in this game. I think the reason Drake May gets off to the start and has the game he does is because they committed to the running game and Ramondre Stevenson was put into position to succeed. And I think that when it comes to the Patriots this year, I think that you need to go week by week. My declarations last week, I think, were a little strong. I'm not totally coming off of them. I did slide around my fucking kitchen on my vinyl fucking plank floors with Crisco covered in my body all Sunday afternoon because it was such a wonderful, wonderful thing to see the Patriots win a game like that. They hadn't won a high-scoring game like that in how long. They hadn't scored how many – they hadn't scored 30 whatever points since Drake May was in eighth fucking grade. In eighth grade! And – You need to take these wins how they come. But as a perfectionist, like, you have to put in perspective with this Patriots generation, with these fans, dude. You have a whole crop of fans from like 20. I'm 31. You have a whole crop of fans from like their late 20s to their mid 30s, where all they saw, the only thing they saw, was the best of all time. Everything was the best. The 20-year run was the best 20-year run any team has ever been on. You had the best coach, the best quarterback. You had some of the best defenses. You had the best, in my estimation, the best corner. Ty Law in the early 2000s is probably the best you'll ever see a corner play ever in football history, dude. Besides maybe Darrell Revis in the mid-2000s. Those two, it's you. We were fucking best tight end of all time. One of the best slot receivers of all time. It's just you come to be used to perfection. And when you have what happened the last 2 years, you run short of patience. And that's why I am so fucking hard on this team. But it felt so fucking good to this week to be satisfied, to be actually satisfied after a game. And we'll get to the defense. We'll get to Mike Vrabel in a second. But Manish, I kind of want to get your like knee-jerk reactions to this win for the Patriots and maybe some overreactions that we had on last week's podcast.
I thought Drake May looked really good, really efficient. And as you said, it helps when your running game, you know, gets off the ground, so to speak, as opposed to last week. The other part of that, the whole offensive equation, is that, and I think we talked about this last week, we were all anticipating Trevion Henderson to be more involved and have a larger snap share. But what we saw in week two was a rookie who is going to be prone to making mistakes. And look, mistakes that actually matter, like messing up in pass protection. And I think that's not something – that gets swept under the rug. You know, I know the fantasy football world wants Trevion Henderson to take over and has already labeled Ramondre Stevenson as an afterthought, a guy who fumbles, and he's not going to be a factor. Clearly, Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels don't think that way. And Stevenson looked exceptional. What I thought was funny was that on that long catch and run by Stevenson in the game, that was actually a play that Mike Vrabel say they repped in practice for Trevion Henderson. And I don't know if he clarified why they didn't run it for Trevion Henderson and instead they went to Ramondre Stevenson. But Stevenson has shown, you know, at least in one game against a really bad defense, you know, keep it in perspective, that he can be, you know, a viable piece to the puzzle as they move forward. And it's not just going to be Trevion Henderson because he's really fast and explosive and had an exceptional preseason. Now, Stevenson isn't going anywhere. And the idea of just kind of casting him aside because he's a quote unquote fumbler, I think was, you know, premature. And I think he's going to be a part of this equation throughout the season. And I think he's going to be invaluable to this offense. You know, Trevion Henderson will get his opportunities, but you just can't play the way that Henderson played in pass pro last week and expect to get more PT. You're not going to do it. And a guy like Mike Vrabel is not going to stand for it.
Yeah. And I think that, sorry to disparage Burge. Disparage, dude. When Burge isn't here, we should have a segment just called Dispersing Burge. Disparaging Burge. And this is the first inaugural segment and the first inaugural take, dude. I think this is a Josh McDaniels game more than it is a fucking Mike Vrabel game. You could talk about him having the balls to use his kicker that missed two extra points on a 50-plus yarder. You could talk about a couple different than the game management and maybe the game plan things, but I think this is a Josh McDaniels give him his flowers game. I thought the way he stuck with Ramondre Stevenson and involved him in the offense, the way he set up Drake May for success, the way he called a game to make sure that his line wasn't exposed. There was a lot of quick hitters and a lot of running plays earlier in the game that set them up to play actions and bootlegs and fake stretch runs and stuff like that, that made it really easy on them in the second half to move the ball when they really needed to versus the Dolphins. And I guess my one takeaway, my one negative, because I want to keep this most positive, but like, the defense is a fucking problem. And I know you're missing your best player. We got some updates today. Yeah. We're recording on Wednesday. We got some updates today that Christian Gonzalez did practice today. I don't know in what capacity. I didn't know if it was a full participation. I'm guessing it was limited based on the fact that he hasn't fucking practiced in 2 months. But the stamp of this team hasn't been Mike Vrabel yet. I guess that's the kind of the point I'm getting to. You're top in the league in penalties. You're top in the league in pre-stat penalties. You're not playing great defense. You're not getting off the field on third downs. A lot of the Dolphins' mistakes in the second half were self-inflicted by Tua. That awful interception to Mapu. He airmailed Tyreek Hill on a deep out that was absolutely wide open. He threw it over his head by like 15 yards. So I think while I'm going to give the Patriots offense, Josh McDaniels, and Drake May their flowers, and especially Ramondre Stevenson their flowers, I do think that it is tepid optimism, because I think there are even – it is a rebuilding team. It's a young rebuilding team, and there's going to be red flags everywhere. But I think that we need to be somewhere between this isn't good enough, that it doesn't matter, we beat the Dolphins, and everything is fine, Drake May is the best ever. Like, there needs to be somewhere – in between where I think I am right now, where it's, yeah, I think the offense played really well and we have some opportunities for success there, but obviously like the penalties, the special teams, the punt return, that the fucking 11 guys in the same 20 yards on the field on that punt return. There's so many little things, the little things they need to clean up on, but it was really refreshing for them to win a game in this fashion where I feel like they won this game, right? They sacked Tua on that last drive. They got so much pressure on Tua. They couldn't get in the end zone. And it was Milton Williams, your big high price free agent, that ends up making the game sealing sack. So like, all of that is good and well, and that's how you want to win a game. But it's still, you still have to have tepid. Your optimism has to be tepid, is kind of the overarching point I'm trying to make here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, when you, if you're fair about it and you look at this objectively, the Dolphins probably have the worst defense in the NFL. They have been on the field outside of the two drives last week before the first half ended and at the end of the game. They've had 15 real drives that they faced in two games. They have forced two punts on those 15 drives. That is historically inept. So you do have to keep perspective. While you want to praise Drake May, as we have, and Ramondre Stevenson and Josh McDaniels, you know, for taking what's there against a bad defense, you also can't dismiss the fact that it was a bad defense. So they'll have a better challenge against the Steelers. Now, the Steelers defense might not be exactly what a lot of people thought entering the season, but they're certainly going to be a stiffer challenge than Miami was, last weekend.
All right. So, I don't know. I don't really have much. I don't want to get too deep on the Pats because I know I'm going to start saying shit that I'm going to regret just like last week. But I think that the whole crux of this year is we need these games. We need these games that you're supposed to win to an inferior opponent. No matter if the Patriots are rebuilding right now, the Dolphins are an inferior opponent. We need to stack these kind of wins. And then we need to pop a couple teams that we shouldn't win. Like, next week versus the Steelers, you're an underdog. You're a 1.5 underdog. That's a game that I look at that, like, even though you're an underdog, you could pop that team and win. Like, you want to start seeing the Patriots build on the success, and you don't want to keep them down. You don't want them to be just beating who they're supposed to beat forever. You want them to start popping people. I know that's getting ahead of myself. They finally fucking won. But, yeah, regardless of that, Manish, are you ready to get in our picks from last week?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was above 500. I can't speak to the rest of the podcast.
I think no, Burge got absolutely wrecked. I think I got wrecked too. But we'll start with Manish, since you had the best luck this week. Bills -6.5 versus the Jets. That was an easy win. You had the Browns +11.5 versus the Ravens. I think that was your only loss. And then the 49ers -4.5 versus the Saints. I think that ended up being a win because our old buddy Mac Jones went absolutely. Yeah, they won by 5. So -4.5 hits versus the Saints. Do you have anything to say to Mac Jones?
Well, I'm actually starting him in my guillotine league. But Mac Jones, I thought, played really well. You know, Christian McCaffrey being healthy certainly helps. Playing the Saints also helps. But I thought he acquitted himself, you know, pretty well last year, playing for an injured Trevor Lawrence. And the guy's not going to wow you, but, you know, this was a player I think that fits in to what Kyle Shanahan wants out of his quarterback. And, you know, he took shots when he needed him, hit the Juwan Jennings on a big touchdown that mattered in the second half, you know, took care of the ball. You know, he was a first-round pick for a reason. I mean, that's not to say that he's going to, you know, set the world on fire, but he's not some, you know, some slappy off the street. I mean, this is a guy who has won in this league. And as far as backup goes, I mean, I think he's one of the top-end backups. You need a guy for a few weeks to keep the ship afloat and, you know, maybe even win some games. And you know, we'll see what happens this week. But I thought he did a really good job last week. I thought Kyle Shanahan did a great job preparing him. The game plan was exceptional. Christian McCaffrey looked every bit like the Christian McCaffrey that we remembered from a year and a half ago. You know, I don't think the Niners are dead. I thought that, you know, people may have thought when Brock Purdy was pronounced to be out 2 to 4 weeks that that was going to be it for them.
And I think pronounced dead.
No. Not literally pronounced dead. I think he's only got a turf toe. I don't think that kills people. At least
It almost fucking killed Joe Burrow. Dude's gonna be out 9.
Well, it killed the Bengals season, maybe. But I thought that Mac Jones did a really good job, and I mean, I think they have a winnable game. I know it's against a 2-0 opponent in Arizona this week. I'm not a big believer in Arizona. I think I think they can win that game with Mac Jones.
All right. Well, dude, they're fucking pronounced.
My apologies if someone actually has not made it with a turf toe. But I think that he'll be fine.
If your life has been altered by turf toe, call 1-800 breaking the plane.
Turf toe actually is an excruciating injury. I've talked to guys who've had it.
Dude, have you had your toe roll under your foot while you're running and trying to stop? I've had it one time, dude. And my knuckle on my toe, I didn't get surgery and I didn't get it fucking fixed. The knuckle on my toe is the size of a fucking golf ball, dude. It's insane. Enough about
my feet.
It's
pretty nasty. It's really a nasty injury. I've actually seen it up close with a couple guys who've had it, and I mean, I empathize with them. So it's you know, we're joking around here. It's obviously a serious injury. It's you know, costs Joe Burrow in all likelihood his season, maybe the Bengals season. You know, just it's something that I don't think name gives it justice. Yeah, it's a terrible name. They really need to change the name.
Because it makes you sound like a B-I-T-C. It makes you sound like a wuss, dude. It makes you sound like a wuss.
Yeah, it's really a painful injury. It's not something I'd wish on anybody.
No, dude, your whole foot hurts, dude. Your whole top of your foot and the bottom of your foot when you try to plant and shit like that. But let's get to Burge's pick from last week since they were so bad. The Chargers, that was a hit. Jacksonville, +3.5. Whoops. And then Denver, -2.5. I think they lost outright. So, Burge, we love you. We can't wait to see you next week. But goddamn, you got to figure it out on the picks. getting to mine from last week, I have the Rams at -5.5. That hit. I think the Rams are a problem. I think McVay and Stafford. I think Stafford's one of those guys who's probably like Rodgers or Brady. He's probably going to be able to play till his late 30s, early 40s.
If he can stand, he's always got a. He's been dealing with a back injury on and off for like 3 years.
Yeah, who has the worst back? Him or the Claymore lady that he didn't help? Anyway, Cincinnati -3.5. That hit, bang! You fucking Jake Browning, dude. Shout out to Jake Browning and his unbelievable girlfriend with that outfit, dude. Go Bengals, dude! Fucking go Bengals, dude! And then Tampa Bay +2.5. They won outright, dude. I think Tampa Bay with the Eagles in flux, with the Lions, with some new coordinators, I think there's a real opportunity for Tampa Bay to make some noise this year. I think continuity, it has a lot to do in the NFL with success, and I think they've had a lot of same pieces in place for a while. They have Mbuka and then – Godwin coming back. They have Mike Evans. They have a dual threat in the backfield. So I honestly think that Kate Otten's a more than capable tight end. I think they're going to make some noise.
Yeah, well, look, I agree with you on paper. They got a real chance to do some damage, but the injuries really are piling up. They lost an offensive lineman. Abuka actually is dealing with a hip and groin injury. We'll see what kind of shape he's in. Yeah, and even Baker Mayfield's banged up. He's going to play against the Jets on Sunday, but that guy took a beating the other night. So just look. By the way, Tristan Wirfs hasn't even played yet. So they are dealing with a litany of injuries, but they're extremely talented. And Baker Mayfield, unbelievable. He is showing exactly what a lot of people thought he would show right out of the chute. He has the number one overall pick, and he actually had a really good season with Freddie Kitchens as the offensive coordinator in Cleveland, but then things kind of went sideways. But there's a lot of conversation. I know we'll kind of go off on a tangent, but real quick, a lot of conversations about how Jalen Hurts has had a lot of different offensive coordinators in his career. Baker Mayfield has had something like 7, 8, 9 different offensive coordinators in his career. And that guy is playing every bit like you would think a number one overall pick would play. It just took a few years. And it's really odd because now I understand why people were so high on him coming out of college. I wasn't as high as a lot of other people were. But this guy is a great player. I mean, let's just call it what it is. He's had an up and down, start to a season. But currently, the way he is playing since becoming a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, an exceptional quarterback.
Dude, I was a big Baker Mayfield guy because I think we talked about leadership and you talked about the meeting that Hurts and I think the GM at the time had to be a little bit more engaging with his teammates and shit like that. But I think that was I think sometimes that's the X factor because like Baker Mayfield is talented, but I don't think he's like a guy that is good at a lot of things, but not great at one thing, right? He's an accurate guy. He's not overly accurate. He has a strong enough arm, but he doesn't have a rocket arm. He's an athletic running quarterback or improvising quarterback, but he's not overly athletic and fast. So he does a lot of things really well. But I think the thing that sets him apart is the thing that you just talked about. Dude, it looked like he broke his ankle. And then he got up in CJ Gardner's face. And then he called him Chauncey in the fucking postgame. Like, dude, this guy... There's a little bit more, you see it with Brady, dude. Brady, like, whether I like to admit it or not, wasn't the most physically gifted guy. I know his arm was a different – his mechanics and his arm and his accuracy were on a different level. But, like, dude, his intensity and his – all the intangibles that he brought to the table is why he won 7 Super Bowls. Yeah. It wasn't because he was the most talented guy on the field every time. And I think Baker Mayfield, no matter what you say, I think I would take that guy on my team playing pretty much any fucking position any day.
Yeah, nobody has won me over more in the last 10 years at any position than Baker. From what I thought he would be coming out of college to how I feel about him as a player now, I would love to have him be the quarterback of the team that I root for. That's just
dude. What would you do, Hurts for Baker straight up?
Would I do it? Would I personally do it? I would personally do it, but the Eagles would never do that.
Yeah, I tried. All right.
Now, so what I would say is that, hey, look, Baker Mayfield 2-0 against Jalen Hurts in the playoffs.
Dude, I remember hitting a huge bet on that first game when they played. Yeah, that was great. But let's get to this week's picks. I'll rattle off Burgess real quick because we'll just hit a quick 0-3 because he's got three dogs here. Patriots plus 1.5. I actually like that a lot. I think there's a chance the Patriots can win this game outright this week. Bengals with Jake Browning versus the Vikings with Carson Wentz, right? Isn't that matchup?
Yeah, but, Minnesota versus Cincinnati, yep.
So Bengals plus 3 in that game, and then he has the Texans plus 1.5. I do like the Texans to turn it around this week, but I'm just not sold on them yet. Manish, I'm going to run through your picks. I'll do one at a time. You can tell me why you picked them after I'm done with them. I got the Jags. So you've got the other side of that. So we're actually going to do the Texans minus 2 because the Texans plus 2 because, Manish, you have the Jags plus 2 versus the Texans. Tell me why.
I got the Jags minus 2 against the Texans. Yeah,
Jags is minus 2. Yeah. Burge hasn't passed Texans plus 2. I apologize.
I mean, I thought they should have beaten the Bengals last week, if not for some really odd drops. De'Ami Brown dropped a perfect pass in the end zone from Trevor Lawrence. Brian Thomas had alligator arms. I think he's dealing with a wrist issue. I thought Bajal Tuten, the rookie, really has a lot of juice. You're going to see more and more of him. I think this offense is the real deal. I think Liam Cohen, you know, has shown himself to be a really good coach through these first two games. And I'm not a believer in anything about the Texans, frankly. Their offensive line is horrible. Their defense is good. Not unbeatable or not close to unbeatable. CJ Stroud really has looked like a mediocre to below mediocre player after his rookie season. I'm just not impressed by them. And I think a lot of that probably stems from the fact that their offensive line is terrible. And because of that, they have no semblance of a running game. Their longest run the other night was the touchdown run from Nick Chubb, which I believe the Bucs allowed them to score wisely because the Bucs got the ball back and then ultimately scored the game-winning touchdown on the ensuing drive.
Thank you very much.
There's something about the Texans. I'm sure it won and lost a lot of fantasy games for a lot of people. Just not impressed by the Texans. I think the Jags, if not for some odd drops, would have been 2-0.
All right, so the next one you have on the docket here is Chargers -3 versus the Broncos.
Yeah, look, the Broncos probably should be 2-0 also, if not for that penalty at the end of regulation that gave the Colts another opportunity at a game-winning field goal. That being said, the Broncos really could be run on, and I'm really surprised by that. I know Jonathan Taylor is one of the league's better backs, but he ran all over Denver, not what I anticipated, and I think that could be good news for the Chargers because the weak part of the Charger offense through these first two games has been the running game with their rookie Amari Hampton not really getting off the ground. Najee Harris still kind of working himself back after not being around for much of the summer after the fireworks injury. But their pass game is lights out. Justin Herbert, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast, MVP. He's looking like an MVP with every passing quarter. This guy is a dominant player. He's going to have a monster season. I think the Chargers are primed to have a monster season, a great early AFC West matchup. I'll lay the field goal. That's how much confidence I have in Los Angeles.
All right. And then the last pick for the week you have here is Raiders +3.5 at the Commanders.
Yeah, that's more of a Jaden Daniels is not playing pick. Marcus Mariota is probably going to be the starting quarterback in this game. I thought he played fairly well in a couple stints last year, but it's still Marcus Mariota. The Raiders cannot play worse than they did the other night against the Chargers. The good news for them is that they're playing a much worse defense in the Commanders than they did the other night against Los Angeles. Geno Smith, look, he's not the Geno Smith who threw for 380 yards against the Patriots. He's also not the Geno Smith who looked lost with the three interceptions the other night. I think he's a very good player. I think he'll get back on track. The big question mark or mystery, I guess you should say, when it comes to the Raiders is, who is Ashton Jeanty? I mean, what kind of player is he going to be? Because typically when you draft a running back that high, top five, top 10, the guy hits the ground running. It's rare that a guy struggles out of the gate. Now it happens. Christian McCaffrey wasn't, exceptional as a rookie, but recent NFL history is littered with guys who, when they are taken that early, make a difference, and they make a difference right away. And Jeanty really has been a non-factor through these first two games. I think it's in many ways a breakout game for him against the Commanders defense, which I don't think is particularly good, to be honest with you. So, look, they're getting points. I know they're going from, West Coast to East Coast, but they already did that week one.
Big enough deal.
Yeah.
With the travel.
It probably isn't. It wasn't week one when they went up in Foxborough. So I think, getting 3.5 points is a gift to me. And for as bad as they looked, you kind of buy the dip there with the Raiders. I think they win. And just real quick as an aside before I get lambasted by my Eagles fans, Baker Mayfield beat Jalen Hurts once in the playoffs. He has beaten him many times, or multiple times, I should say, overall, including the regular season. But in the playoffs, it was a Tom Brady team and then a Baker Mayfield team that beat the Eagles.
So speaking of the Eagles, I'm actually picking against them this week. My first pick is going to be Rams +3.5. Even if they don't win this game, I think the Eagles are ripe for the taking. Like we said last week, I think the Rams are a little bit more capable right now than the Chiefs are. I think I think their offense and their passing game in general is in a better place than the Chiefs. And I think they might be able to put up a little bit more of a fight offensively than the Chiefs did. So I like the Rams to get even more than a field goal. I could see this being like a 23-20 or even like a 33-30 kind of game. To be totally honest, the higher scoring this game, the more I feel better about the Rams. My next pick is going to be Panthers plus 5.5. I'm just not sold on the Falcons and Michael Penix Jr. I think Bryce Young, I think if he's not an elite quarterback or a top 10 quarterback, I think he's at least passable quarterback. I think their weapons are coming. I think their weapons are going to come along a little bit better. I think you saw some fits and starts from Tet McMillan this week. There were some catches that he was making down the sidelines that even though they weren't receptions, they were just absolutely freakish things he was doing that down the sidelines. I'm not as down on the Panthers as a lot of people. And I think they could definitely cover 5.5. And then my last pick is give me the Cowboys minus 1.5. I think the Cowboys, I think the Cowboys have a little bit of mojo going. You saw, I don't know if you saw the locker room videos from last week, but the Cowboys got a little bit of mojo going. You had Jerry in the locker room, getting the boys fired up. I think the Bears are in a lot of fucking trouble. I think the Cowboys playing away from Jerry World and away from their fans is actually a little bit of an advantage this year with all the things that have gone on in the front office. I know that's a weird take, but I think them playing on the road and having their backs up, I think is a good spot for them. And I'm just not a Ben Johnson guy. I am a Ben Johnson guy, but I'm just maybe not a Caleb Williams guy. I don't see it from the Bears. They haven't been able to stop a nosebleed. Their fucking offense stinks. I don't know, man. I don't know if you've had any takes on those, but I guess the one I feel the least favorable about is the Cowboys game. And I guess the one I feel the most confident about is the Rams game. Cause I'm probably going to put the Rams money line in some kind of parlay this weekend. Cause I think that's good odds for a good team.
Yeah. Look, let's be honest. If you rewind to the AFC divisional playoffs, when the Rams were playing the Eagles in Philly in the snow, if not for a Jalen Carter sack of Matthew Stafford, I think inside of a minute or inside a minute and a half, Matthew Stafford hits an open wide receiver and the Rams win that game. So they were in that game. They got, you know, it's always tough to play Lincoln Financial Field, but I like the idea. I would probably take the Eagles side because they're playing in Philly, but it would not surprise me the least bit if the Rams, you know, came away, I think, with a win. I think they're dealing with some injuries themselves. Your Bears point and Ben Johnson point, I think, is fascinating because you rarely hear this, but this week Ben Johnson came out and said that his team is not practicing like a championship caliber team. It's unusual for a head coach to, you know, criticize his team, you know, that specifically by saying that their practice habits really aren't what they need to be.
That's your fucking problem. You're 34 months into your fucking program. You're the one who should be setting this precedent from fucking May.
Yeah, look, I agree with that. I also think your leaders, I don't know who the leaders are on that team, but I think those guys have to kind of step it up. So I'll be interested to see, you know, how they come out. You know, they're a desperate team. You know, they haven't won yet, playing at home. I agree with you. I think the Cowboys are going to win outright. You know, getting points is a gift in my mind. I would just, you know, my only hesitation is that the Cowboy defense is so bad. Yeah. You know, letting Russell Wilson throw for almost 500 yards. It's such a bad defense. But the offense is so explosive. You know, if I had to pick a side, I'd probably pick the side that you took. It's just you never know, especially when you have these 0-2 teams, because not many teams go off 0-3 unless the rails completely come off. I don't think the Bears are destined for some kind of 3-14 season. I think they're, you know, covering around 500. You know, entering the season, I figured they'd be a 7 or 8 win team, and you know, if that's going to happen, they're going to have to turn things around. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen this week, but it's a toss up. You picked a tough game to pick. And that's why I stayed away from it.
All right. I do things. I go at things that others stay away from on many occasions, Manish. So it's okay to be here. Let's start.
Yeah, I'm on the way up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm chucking from midcourt. All right, let's get into a new segment before we get out of here. We're going to do a power rankings rolling every week. Burge didn't have time to get his in because he has kids and all that stuff. I don't know what that's about. So I guess it's a huge time suck sometimes. I don't know. But we're going to do some power rankings every week. We're going to do a top five. Manish, I don't know. I'm gonna leave this up to you. Do you want to go back and forth from 5 to 1? Or do you want to give me your whole top five and then I'll give you my whole top five? I think it might be easier if we go back and forth because we could each talk about each team and then skip over whoever we have the same.
Yeah, we can start at five. I'll start with my number five team, which you don't have, I believe. And I'm going to go with the Colts. You know, the Colts are a feel-good story. Shane Steichen, you know, seemed to be on the hot seat before the season started. You know, Jim Irsay passed away. His daughter took over. You alluded to you know, her being on the sideline with the headset, which I actually love. I think it's fantastic.
It, I think it's awesome.
I love every part of that.
We've been bitching about Davis and his kid for how fucking long, about how aloof and not invested he is, and we're going to get on this lady for actually giving a fuck with an iced out fucking Cuban on the sideline? Come on.
You know what? Because it keeps people accountable.
Like a fucking wide receiver, dude.
Yeah, she's not like interjecting her opinion. She just wants to absorb what's happening. So she gets a sense when, hey, these coaches talk to me, I can find out if they're full of BS or if there's actually truth in what they're saying. She's just trying to educate herself more. And she's obviously been educated in the sport, you know, being around her father, you know, her whole life. But I love every part of what she's doing. I think it's fantastic. But on the field, 2-0. Yeah, look, no turnovers. No punts through two games. Daniel Jones looks like the player that Dave Gettleman thought he would be when he drafted him in the top 10. Who knows how long it'll last, but right now they, in my mind, are playing like a top five team. They go on the road for the first time. Division game against obviously a winnable opponent in Tennessee. I think they come away being 3-0 after this weekend.
So I agree with everything there, but I think there's a lot of talent on that roster. I just don't think it's in the QB room. But I'll get off with my fifth pick here. So I know you have them a little bit higher, so we might talk about them again. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. The Chargers, they play all three facets of the they play all three facets of the game well. They're good on offense. They're good on defense. They're sound on special teams. They have a good coach, a good quarterback combo. I think you'd be blind if you didn't pick them to be somewhere in your top five for this, at least at this point in the season.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, to me, they're a Super Bowl contender, so I have them a little bit higher. But, you know, top handful of teams in the NFL, I think it's pretty clear at this point. And again, really early, but they hit on, I believe, the two most important parts of any football team, the coach and the quarterback. I think they got the right guys in both of those spots. And as long as Justin Herbert can stay healthy, I think they're going to be a top five team in our power rankings for the next 3 months.
I agree. So my fourth team here, I'll hand it off back to you after this one. My fourth team here is the Eagles. They're 2-0. They're the reigning Super Bowl champs, but I don't think they're anywhere deserving for a top three spot right now.
Yeah, look, I don't have them in my top five, you know, and a lot of people have them as their number one team. I mean, when you look at power rankings across the electronic superhighway, I don't think they play particularly well on offense. As we said earlier, I think actually they played extremely poorly on offense. I think their defense is playing, very good. But I want to see them have a real test on defense because they played a banged up Chiefs team. I thought they played well for only one half against an explosive Cowboys offense. Now they get to play the Rams. So let's see how they do against the Rams. Maybe they sneak into the top five for me next week, but I'd be disingenuous if I told you that they were a top five team through these first two games, because I just haven't seen it. I don't think that they are.
Yeah, and I totally get where you're coming from. I think me putting the Eagles in the top five was basically based on it was. I mean, they've earned it. They've earned it. You know what I mean? They're 2-0 this year. They're the reigning Super Bowl champs. But everything you said is valid. I don't know. I can't hate too much because I'm a big ring guy. Yeah, I'm a big ring guy.
Yeah,
I'm a big rings
guy.
I know it doesn't look pretty on the field, but if you've got a ring in the ring on your hand and you're winning right now, I can't. There's not much.
I get it. Like I don't. To me, it's not a resume power rankings. It's a through the first 2 weeks of the season's power rankings. I know sometimes it's hard to kind of compartmentalize, but I'm trying my best to compartmentalize and not give bonus points for winning the Lombardi Trophy, you know, in February. So my number four team already has a loss, but I think it was kind of a fluky loss. Either way, they lost to another team in the top five. And my number four team is the Ravens. I know they beat up on the Browns last week, dominated. It's kind of what you would expect. What can you take away from that? You know, I don't know that, you know, and maybe I shouldn't even have the Ravens in my top five, but they looked so good against Cleveland. They looked so good offensively until a late Derrick Henry fumble against the Bills on the road, hostile environment, prime time. I give them points for that. So that's why I have them fourth. I can understand if someone doesn't have them in the top five, but to me, they're, you know, offensively, they've been a juggernaut through these first two games. And frankly, they were Derrick Henry fumble away from being 2-0.
All right, then who do you got third?
Third, I have the Chargers, who we spoke about. You know, I'm probably the high guy, probably on this podcast, will always be the high guy on Justin Herbert. For all the different things that I've said through the last hour, to me, they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And we'll see how the next month, you know, shakes out. But they're a powerhouse in the making. The way I see it, the way that Justin Herbert is playing, the way, you know, that Jim Harbaugh has assembled the roster in his second season to kind of mirror what he wants to do on offense and defense, I think they are primed for a magical season.
All right. All right. So third, we've talked about them again. We've talked about them before. I have the Ravens third. We won't get farther in on that. I'm a big Lamar Jackson guy, even though I talked a lot of shit on Harbaugh for the blown leads. I'm a big Harbaugh guy. I think they got a good thing going there, regardless of how many 20-point leads they blow. Second, I have the Packers, dude. I think the Packers are scary. You talk about a team that's good at all three facets of the game. You got Jordan Love coming into his own with a bunch of young receivers, with a dual threat in the back, with the dual threat running back in the backfield with Jacobs. And then they added Micah Parsons to an absolutely loaded front seven. So I think the most important things in the NFL are throwing the football and defending and rushing the passer. So I think they do those things well. So I honestly think the sky is the limit for the Packers.
Yeah, they're great. They're going to show up a little bit later in my top five. My number two is Buffalo. Buffalo, Ravens, whatever. It's a toss up whether you have them second, third, fourth. I mean, these teams are all exceptional teams. The Bills, this is how good the Bills are. I know the Jets, you know, they're in rebuild mode. I totally get it. It's Aaron Glenn's second game as a head coach. But they toyed with the Jets. They didn't unload anything. They didn't reveal much. Josh Allen, you know, basically had a pedestrian game, and they still dominated. They just turned around and gave the ball to James Cook.
50 yards, yeah.
Yeah, James Cook ran all over him. You never felt like this game was ever going to be in doubt. You know, you talked earlier about the never feeling like the Eagles were going to lose that game against the Chiefs. I mean, within a minute or two, you never felt the Bills were going to lose. This game was a complete joke from a Bills perspective. I felt like they gave a 50% effort in this game and still dominated and won by, what, three touchdowns?
Yeah.
And again, I know that both teams are in different spots. One team's rebuilding. One team's chasing a Super Bowl. But the Bills, they're a juggernaut team. They're going to be a top-five team all year. I would love – we'll see what happens in a few months, but I would love to see Josh Allen and Justin Herbert face off in the AFC Championship game. That's the dream scenario for me, because I think those two teams are, you know, destined to be on a collision course at some point in the postseason.
So, yeah, you talked about the Bills, and I have them at number one right now. Josh Allen is unequivocally the best player in football. I really don't think there's another player who's anywhere close to affecting his team's ability to win the game and also being able to make chicken salad out of chicken bleep. I hate the Bills. I love you, Bears, but dude, they're a juggernaut right now. And until somebody legitimately shuts down Josh Allen and makes him look like he did the first couple years in his career, I'm not going to have them anywhere besides number one.
Yeah, that's fair. Totally, totally fair. And again, we're splitting hairs here because you had the Packers second. I had the Packers first for all of the reasons that you outlined. They looked dominating on defense. And that's the one area that's, I wouldn't say it's surprising, but it's the one area that I think elevates them above all these other teams. Because offensively, look, they were a run-centric team last year. Jordan Love still has warts. We'll see if he kind of irons some stuff out. You know, losing Jaden Reed for a couple months, I don't think that's necessarily a big deal. If anything, that'll open up opportunities for their first-round pick, Michael Golden, who's really been a non-factor through these first 2 weeks. They're going to spread the ball around through the air. I don't think that's going to be that much different. You know, Tucker Kraft, their tight end, I think is destined to have a breakout season. You saw him have a breakout game the other day. But defensively, especially now adding Micah Parsons as well, I mean, they have, you know, embarrassed the Lions. They made Jaden Daniels look pedestrian until garbage time, really neutralizing two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, and Jared Goff and Jaden Daniels. They don't have much of a test this week, even though they're going on the road. They're playing in Cleveland. I think they'll handle the Browns pretty handily. But they look really strong in all facets, as you said. Ultimately, I don't think they're going to end up as my number one team. But through 2 weeks, they are, I think it'd be, I think it's unfair not to put them first. I know you don't have them first, and I understand why. But I just think, off the record, that's probably what we wanted to do. But they certainly look like the best team in the NFC through these first two games.
For sure.
And I would, I would anticipate another dominating performance against the Browns on Sunday.
Well, I got a lot of takes off today. Manish, do you have anything left in the tank that you want to get off here before we sign off until next week?
No, I'm good. I'm excited. There's a lot of good games. We touched on a lot of them. The Rams, Eagles, probably the headliner. Monday night, I'm very curious to see what Lions team shows up when they play the Ravens. The team that dropped 52 against the Bears, or the team that kind of laid an egg week one. I think that'll be a fun game. Those two games are the headliners for this week. But there'll be a surprise. Hopefully there's not quarterback injuries, a litany of them last week. Hopefully some of these guys that we pay to watch, stay healthy.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the great things about early in the season, right? There's still hope that those guys get healthy, even if they do miss a couple games. But there also is this kind of like, oh, are they legit or are they ass? You know what I mean? So I think it's a great time of the season. Well, that has been another episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe. That's Manish Burge. We're missing you out there. We'll catch you guys next week. Goodbye.